You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the future of e-commerce. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Tina Sharkey, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. So, Tina, you're the founder and CEO of Brandless, brandless.com. I have to say, first of all, that at Lumi, we get all of our snacks from you.
You do? Yeah, oh my God, tell me everything.
Well, I know that lately the beef jerky has been very popular with a certain group of people. We try everything. So just for a little bit of context for people, so Brandless is an online shop, sells all kinds of dry goods, pantry goods, cosmetics, and everything is exactly $3. It's a e-commerce concept that's been out since last year. Is that correct?
We launched on July 11th, yes.
Is that a decent description of what you do, or how do you explain Brandless to people?
We are basically, we're a community that's reimagining modern consumption, starting with the things people reach for every day. We're sort of committed to the idea of democratizing access to awesome stuff at fair prices. We're also committed to the idea that better doesn't need to cost more. And so we're trying to simplify everything, and we're trying to simplify the idea that people should have to pay more for the things that they love. We're trying to democratize the access to just yummy stuff at fair prices, and we're trying to treat everyone in this country equally. So better everything for everyone is sort of how we think about it, starting with the stuff you reach for every day. So all of the things that are on brandless.com right now are what we call our everyday essentials. So whether it's organic beef jerky or, non-GMO foods or clean beauty, because better is sort of a filter through all of the development. So it's not just yummy and amazing and fair priced. It's also with the filter of better, and it's for everyone. So people shouldn't have to choose between what they want and what they can afford.
And now everything that you sell is under the Brandless label. So you're not reselling some of them, I'm assuming, are private label type of goods, or do you guys mostly source exclusive products? How does that actually work?
Let's clarify what that actually means, because private label would suggest that, everything that we do at Brandless is Brandless, and we work with an extraordinary network of manufacturing partners around the world, and we co-develop the products that we sell to all of our amazing community members. So we're not selling national brands, if that's what you mean. But we are selling Brandless. Everything that you get at Brandless is Brandless. It's our label, and we are a brand. We're not generic. We are totally a brand, unapologetically a brand, but we are reimagining what that actually means. So is that private label? I don't think so. Usually private label is when a retailer has a national brand, right? And that national brand is sitting on the shelf against like a store brand. And
sure.
So they're putting it next to each other. But we don't sell anything but Brandless products.
That's interesting. So here's what I had in mind. I know that if I go to Trader Joe's, they have certain brands of, we're going straight into the deep end. If they have, they have certain brands of chips that might be very similar to other kind of chips, but because it doesn't have the brand on it, they can charge a discounted price. Is that's I guess what I had in mind, but maybe I think your definition is probably more accurate.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you look at our, let's just take our organic sugar, okay? So are other people selling organic sugar that's from the same manufacturer? Probably. Like our tomato sauce, we have a tomato and basil, we have an arrabbiata, and we have a garlic, and they are all organic, and they are all $3, and they are all Brandless. And we co-formulate with the manufacturers, but we don't co-formulate organic sugar because we're just packaging that. So it really depends on a product-by-product basis how you think about it.
Yeah, one of the things that we love at Lumi, just because we are design nerds and think a lot about packaging, it's just everything is so simple and beautiful and well explained. It's a great thing to have around your office because it's not distracting in any way. It's not like trying to grab your attention necessarily. It's there, and the products themselves are really solid. And it's incredible that when you launched, you were able to come out with 100 plus products all at once. I just from a logistical standpoint, I can't imagine how much work went into that that initial launch. How did that come together?
The most important thing when you have a company like this is to have extraordinary people. And so we have the most extraordinary people at Brandless that come from so many different disciplines. And so our merchandising team is absolutely world class. And they have done such a great job at the product development across all the categories. So we launched with 110 products. We're cresting on, 270 roughly now, and we'll be at 300 by mid-year and probably 500 by the end, all in the everyday essentials line. And so none of that happens without extraordinary people doing incredible work. And so the team has been, working on that for a long time and continues to work on that every day.
Well, tell me a little bit more about the people, because first of all, I know that you have quite a storied career, and your co-founder, Ido Leffler, was also the founder of a few different companies that did really well on the retail, like the physical retail, brick and mortar side of things. And I'm sure that the bench is deep. Tell me how the people came together to get this this idea off the ground.
So, great question. So Ido and I have been friends for a really long time. And I think you get to a stage in your life where you're like, you know what? I really want to spend time collaborating with people that have shared belief systems, that have shared purpose and shared kind of approach to the world. So Ido's family lived around the corner from us. Like, I was there in the hospital when his third daughter was born, like just really a good person. So it starts with people. The second thing was that both kind of serial entrepreneurs, and I had taken a side route to be an investor, but really from an operating perspective, like as an entrepreneur, how do I help sort of give other entrepreneurs an unfair advantage? Because I've been doing this for a long time and I'm super passionate about helping other people. And so Ido and I said, gosh, how is it that like we never worked together, but we were both involved with tons of different things at the time. And I said, you know what? Why don't we just start? Like, let's just get together and start talking about the things that we want to fix and solve in the world. What are the problems we see and what do we think we can solve? And Ido said to me, and if you know Ido for a long time, he has this extraordinary wife, Ronit. And he said, I woke up Ronit in the middle of the night a few months ago and I said, something's really bothering me. If people really understood what things cost versus what they paid for them, they'd be rioting in the streets. And she said, okay, Ido, and she went back to sleep. And he said it to me. And I said, well, essentially what you're talking about is the direct consumer relationships that are capable to be built now that couldn't have been built before. Those relationships can be enabled to eliminate a lot of that system inefficiency, which is ultimately like cost. And he said, okay, well, what's bothering you? I said, well, the thing that's bothering me is that there's so much negativity in the world. Everything is being rejected. So governments being rejected, institutions are being rejected, brands are being rejected, all the things are being rejected, but nobody's building a solution. And I would like to take all of that negative energy and sort of, as you know, I like to say, like turn that fan upside down. Like if people are really saying that they don't want to use the products their parents use and they grew up with, they don't want to do business with brands that don't represent their values, and they don't believe that government or institutions have the answers for their future, why don't we fix that? And he said, oh, you want to fix all of that? And I said, well, yeah, because why don't we start with the concept of, to your point, we can go direct to people. So there we can eliminate a lot of cost, number one. Number two, if we're going direct to people, why don't we start by building a community of shared values? And then why don't we look at all that rejection and say, well, why are they rejecting it? And what can we do to fix that? And so we said, well, why don't we build something with our purpose and our intention, which is to put people first, to build something where like true values and values matter, and you can actually have values you care about, whether that's your belief system. That belief system could be, hey, I don't think trees should be cut down to make toilet paper. Or your values can be, hey, I'd like to use organic feminine hygiene, or I'd like to feed my kids organic stuff. So values can be all over the place. They can be dietary beliefs, lifestyle beliefs. I don't believe people should test chemicals on animals to make beauty products. Okay, that's a lifestyle belief. That's cruelty-free. So we said, what if you actually took all of those belief systems, and they're all over the place, right? And they tend to not be the same for every category. And then what if you took the idea of value, like, can I afford this? And you fuse them together. Could we build a community that sort of was built on the premise that better shouldn't cost more? Who says it needs to? And what if we just built a community that democratized access to goodness, like at the highest level, that would sort of maybe solve some of that aggro rejection of all of the things that we know to be true and usher in this idea that you can actually usher in kindness and scale kindness? And what if we reimagined that? Well, I guess in a way, we'd kind of be reimagining what it means to be a brand, because brands essentially are trust marks, right? And if people have lost trust, then we have to reimagine, we have to start at the very basis of what it means to reimagine that. And that's where we came up with the idea of being brandless, which was sort of, think of it this way, more like live more, brand less.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, as someone who lives and breathes branding and graphic design, it's fascinating to me that there's a little bit of a paradox, and I'd love for you to explain it, because obviously the name is brandless, but you mentioned it is a brand. What does brandless mean in your definition of the term?
So brandless means a bunch of things, but first and foremost, it means authenticity, meaning that we're not hiding behind anything. It's authentically just about people. The second thing to us brandless means is transacting kindness. The third thing brandless means is trust and transparency. And the fourth thing brandless means is the idea that brands don't need to be filters with false narratives, that everybody has their own story, including products. So who says that beef jerky, using, you know, your example, needs Mad Men and Madison Avenue to write a story about it? You know, came from the fields, came from, you know, high on the plains, the cowboy sitting around the fire one night decided to make some beef jerky. Let me have a little tune for that, will you, please? You know, whatever. Come on, like, it's grass-fed, it's organic, it's beef jerky, like, let's get on with it. Like, if you have a story to tell, why don't you tell the story of how you ate the beef jerky, or why that's a good snack at your office, or how you're using that as a protein or a meal replacement, or what makes that a great road trip? But like, the idea that someone else has to make up that story is just missing the point. So our whole feeling is that products can tell their own stories, and those stories are actually about the attributes. Like, who said that applesauce was a toddler snack? I mean, did you ever ask applesauce? Does applesauce agree with that idea? I mean, does Mott's and Del Monte own applesauce? I don't think so. Applesauce owns applesauce. Like, stop it. Yeah. And then people have their own stories too. So, you know, I said the other day, we were chatting and I was talking about our feminine hygiene, and I said, look, guys, or gals, or anybody, like, I don't know about you, but like, I'm not often in white yoga pants on a white horse on a white beach at sunset, like when I have my period. I don't know. I mean, I gotta believe that's an actress. That just isn't real. Like, let's just talk about real stuff. And when it comes to real things, like, how do you want to tell that story? And that's not for us to decide. So as designers, you'll appreciate that when we said we trademarked the white space, what we meant was we left it blank intentionally so that the stuff that really matters gets in there. And often that's your story or the product story. And the product story is about its attributes, not about the narrative that somebody made up about it. And you'll also appreciate as a designer, when you look across our packaging, what I think you find appealing about it is that it's the same on every single thing we do, so that you always know where to find the information you're looking for.
Right.
And so if you were to go, like if you and I could do this podcast in the field and we were going down the aisle of a market, any bag, box, can, bottle of things that we might pick up, we could like almost play a game of how quickly you could find the attributes you were looking for. And that time would be different for every single one of those packages because it's so inconsistent. And they're not keeping up with what consumers just want to know, the facts. Like, what's the deal? Is it gluten-free? Is it organic? Is it non-GMO? Is it EPA Safe for Choice certified? Is it, you know, whatever? Is it vegan? Is it, does there any artificial sugars or colors? Like, just tell me what I need to know. And then let me figure out how I want to use it. but or what it means to me, but the, what it means to me, that's for somebody to decide. The products just need to tell what they are. And that doesn't make it generic. It makes it authentic.
Yeah.
It makes it transparent, right?
I think there's, well, I personally love the, I mean this in the best possible way, the kind of like utilitarian aspect of it, because like you said, there's a functional aspect to the packaging. It's supposed to explain something to you. And when you ask most brands what they think of when they think of branding, it's differentiation. It's something that will allow that product to stand out on the shelf at the retail store. But in your case, you're developing this relationship directly with the customer. And so really, the packaging becomes just like a mechanism to deliver the product that's inside, or once it's in your home, to allow you to decide if you're going to eat this thing or that thing. So it really turns the whole idea of what branding is on its head. And it's kind of postmodern in a weird way. It's like, it reminds me of what Muji does, which I just love what they do. So I think it's a fascinating idea to bring that direct to consumers.
Totally agree.
Another thing that I wanted to touch on is, it seems to me like we talked a little bit about your team. Ido, your co-founder, was the founder of Yubi, which was notebooks and kids' school supplies. He also did Yes2, which was a whole brand of skincare. You have done a lot with your career in the past at AOL, but also as an investor in companies like Brit & Co., as well as Ipsy. Ipsy being, you know, a direct-to-consumer model for cosmetics. So like, between the two of you, you've really covered the whole gamut of retail experiences, online, offline. What are the things that you were able to like take out of that like melting pot and reject just like, not just from a values standpoint, but actually how it works logistically? And what are the things that you kept? What are the things that you haven't had a chance to do yet that you're hoping to use all your experience to try?
Such a good question. And, you know, it's a hard question to answer, because sometimes, you know, if I asked you, what are you using to walk or to talk or to run, you wouldn't really be able to tell me, because you just do it. You are basically the sum of your experience and your parts. So what I would say is, everything that I've done in my career has been about building communities with soul and scale, whether they were media communities, whether they were, you know, facilitated technology communities. You know, I was the president and global chair of Baby Center, which is a global community of new and expecting moms. So community with soul, but enabled by technology and mobile and platforms. 8 out of 10 babies in the U.S. were Baby Center babies when I left Baby Center. And we were in 22 countries and 14 languages. And it was extraordinary building a global platform for that kind of a tribe, right? But then when I was at AOL, I also oversaw all of People Connection and AOL Instant Messenger and AIM. So that was building social tools to enable other people to create communities and find their own affinities. And there's lots in between. But what I love about that is that Brandless is a community first. And so enabling and basically creating a community of people with a shared belief that they deserve better and that they're already awesome. And how can we unlock their belief in themselves? We're hoping that the simplicity of the packaging and the simplicity of the idea and the simplicity of the assortment, which has been curated in their on their behalf, and the pricing system, which has been reduced and simplified to make you don't even have to bother checking prices, right? It's just, it's relieves you from that mental overhead. From my perspective, that actually creates the sense of shared purpose, so that we can have the opportunity to hear other people's stories and be facilitators of that. And so the way we think about social, the way we think about, you know, it's like, don't put the camera on us. Let's put the camera back on you. Like, tell us and share with us. And that's something I've been doing my whole career. And that's a thread, which is enabling other people to tell their stories. And the design of the products is meant to be so simple that, like, you know, look, if you and I were texting each other, And then you started texting with your mom or your coworker or your best friend. Like, you wouldn't use a different texting platform, right? It's all in your Messenger or, you know, whatever your texting platform that you're using. But products have never had a UI and UX in, at the CPG level. So I tried to apply that UI and UX to actually have a system that's scaled and could be applied to anything, not just CPG, so that people didn't have to really think about it. You don't think about when you go to do a text, like, oh, what program should I open? You just do it because it becomes utility and muscle memory, just like with AIM and Instant Messenger. Like, we were enabling connections of other people. So I've tried to apply that technology and product metaphor to this platform as well. Edo has taken just this extraordinary career of building amazing, phenomenal products that have social cause and purpose and that do well by doing good, not just because the products are great, but because they aspire to give back and to be bigger than any individual product they sell. So at UB, for every school supply that they sell, they give one to a community, a student in need in that region. For Cheeky, they make incredible tabletop, both paper and china, and they also they give meals away for everything that they sell. At Bradless, when we go to check out, because unfortunately, much to my complete chagrin and dismay, not everybody has $3. So if not everybody has $3, like, what do we do about that? And so when you check out at brandless.com, there's already something in your shopping cart. And that is a meal that we bought in your honor for Feeding America. And Feeding America is the largest hunger relief organization here in the U.S. And, you know, at 28 weeks, we'd already given away over a quarter of a million meals. So Brandless is about walking that walk and that purpose that connects all of us to something that's bigger than anything we sell. This idea that we can actually start a movement and scale kindness and scale intention while we are creating extraordinary products and making all of your coworkers happy with our beef jerky.
Yeah, everything that you just mentioned makes a lot of sense to me. And I love that insight of how can we apply UI and user experience principles to physical products and the information architecture of it. That makes a lot of sense to me, and it's a fascinating idea. To be honest, you make everything sound so easy. What are the challenges that you're dealing with these days that are keeping you up at night? The things that you're trying to figure out that you haven't quite solved yet.
I may make it sound easy, but it's not easy. There's a lot of science to that art. And that's because we have incredible people that we collaborate with every day who are committed to helping solve it as a team and committed to helping figure it out as we go and committed to testing and learning and failing fast and blameless experiments, right? Because you need to have blameless experiments in order to try new things, adapt to new ways of doing things, and create speed and deployment so that you can actually say, oh, well, is this working, not working? If it's not working, let's try something else. And so so I think that is the first and foremost. It's not easy at all. It's just that we're doing it with great people who are committed to figuring out and alongside our community, who I think cuts us a lot of slack because they appreciate how hard we're trying and how much we care and how transparent and honest we are with them in everything that we do. What are the things that are keeping us up at night? I would say the things keeping us up at night are just to go faster, to serve more people, and to scale what we're doing, because this is not a virtual business, right? This scales with like pure, you know, muscle and manpower. And so there's a lot of complicated things to creating these products, scaling these products, shipping these products, all of that. And so that's something that we are deeply committed to, but it's, you know, you just can't go fast enough, right?
Yeah. Can you go a little deeper on some of those logistical challenges? Do you have any examples that have come up that you're trying to solve?
I would say just shipping more faster, right? So, just scaling our distribution centers, scaling, everything that we do, even office space, you know, it's just like growth is hard because growth is awesome, but it's hard to go, fast because you're always like, oh my gosh, we need more, scaling our culture, scaling our onboarding, scaling everything that we do. that's just, you know, you just can't move fast enough. And you want to make sure that every single employee that comes is as informed as the one that came before them. And as they all come because they're inspired and they're excited and they're awesome. But then I want to make sure that they get the same TLC and onboarding and documentation of everything so that we can move fast. One of the great things that you just said or that you noticed about our packaging is that the system is one that scales, right? But this, it's hard to do that with people. So you have to make sure that everybody gets that same indoctrination to the company so that they can move at that same speed and basically have not only the shared purpose, but be set up for success in their very specific roles and responsibilities. And they're working collaboratively because a lot of times the people that are here, for example, somebody might have come from being a product development person at a retailer or something like that. And now they're working with engineers and data scientists. So like, you know, it's just like it's a renaissance of skills around the table. And so people are learning how to collaborate with other kinds of people, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I look at your business, I sort of feel like this idea could have, aside from the fact that direct-to-consumer models are becoming more popular now, I kind of feel like your idea could have worked 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Why didn't somebody come up with this before?
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because I think there's a bunch of reasons. First of all, when Steve Jobs walked on the stage when he showed everybody the iPhone for the first time, and he was so excited, right? I mean, I would have been. It was incredible what they did. But he didn't hold it up and say, taxi, you know, like, this is how you're going to hail a car in the future. Like, they didn't even imagine what that platform of iOS would unlock and what the smartphone would unlock, which ultimately is become a cursor in the real world, right? Like, wherever we are. And so when you think about what the platforms have unlocked in terms of accelerating the changes in consumer behavior, it's only now that you can even imagine having these direct relationships because, like, the people at Brandless, and I don't mean our employees, I mean like all of the people in our community, the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that we interact with daily on Facebook, on Instagram, and email, and text, and Twitter, etc. Like all those platforms, the smartphones, the mobile adoption, the speed of Wi-Fi, like the list goes on and on of like why it's the perfect time. You know, ideas can come and go. There are no new ones. The question is the timing and the environment that's right. And a lot of times those things are not in your control. I would say like when people say to me, oh, how do you feel about the fact that Amazon bought Whole Foods? Or how do you feel about the fact that, you know, Walmart bought Jet, or how do you feel about the fact that, you know, Instacart is doing whatever? I was like, I think all of that's amazing. And people say, why? And I said, because you need to move this entire category forward, and that everyday consumption, three meals a day times this whole country. When you look at like e-commerce is the laggard categories, you know, CPG is one of them. So when Amazon and Walmart and Instacart and all these companies move consumer adoption forward, that also creates the right environment for new companies to pop up that are have a different take on that, but are part of the mix. And there's lots to go around. You're talking about a $2 trillion total addressable market. So there's a lot of room for growth and there's a lot to go around.
Yeah, when you mention Amazon, obviously, if you had had this idea 10 or 20 years ago, you know, at the time when Amazon was first getting off the ground, the questions that would come up is like, are people actually going to use the internet to buy things? Or like, will people put their credit card into a website? Like, those were the problems that we were dealing with at that time. And I think for the most part, at least in the US, things have moved way past that. And you're a beneficiary of that because, you know, people, when they come to Brandless even the first time, they're not going to question whether they'll experiment with buying something for a few dollars on your website. But on the other hand, Amazon's been working on that for quite a while now. And so on the side of scaling and optimizations that you were talking about, they have a certain level of expectation of, you know, free overnight shipping and all this type of stuff. Has it been challenging to meet those expectations in any way?
No, because I think we're doing something that's very complementary, you know. And I think that the expectations are, you know, really about who says better needs to cost more and can you make extraordinary things at fair prices? That's the expectation that nobody saw coming. And I think that people have been so unbelievably positive about our intention and what we're trying to do for everybody that people are cheering us on.
Yeah. How do you, so I mean, to me, one of the major advantages and why, for example, we use Brandless at our office is it's easy for us to say like to our office manager, we need some more granola or something like that. And it's just go to Brandless and get the granola. There's a handful of flavors. They're all great. Go for it. Whereas if you go to Amazon, there's 800 different kinds, and it's a quite a complicated decision. So you've really unburdened people. How do you balance that with adding new products? How do you decide when too many flavors of granola, how many is too many?
Well, we're using what we call a just what matters philosophy, which is that, you know, if you go to Target and get out your tape measure, they probably have 48, 52 feet of salad dressing. That's ridiculous. And so I don't think we need 48 feet. Having said that, we're using a just what matters philosophy, even in our merchandising. So we've edited it down to what we believe are the most popular. Then we've edited it down to what we believe are breaking trend or the most interesting or new in different ways. So it really depends by category, by SKU. So in the case of salad dressing, we have three of the most popular and that we know that people love. And then we introduced one new one and we love that one. And then sometimes we might introduce one for a limited time, like a holiday. So for example, for fall, we did a very rich maple assortment. So we had maple coffee and maple cookies and maple lip balm and all kinds of maple things for fall, maple soaps and all of that. But then we sunset that, you know, at the end of that, and now we're just launching our lemon verbena spring collection. So there are certain things that we're going to do as limited time or seasonal, certain things we're going to do because we want to make sure that people get the basics and get what they love. And then there are certain things we're going to do where we're going to break trend and we're going to introduce you to things you've never tried before. But what we always want to do is just what matters. So we don't want to overdo it, because we don't want you to be suffering the paradox of choice. If anything, that's exactly what we are working against, because we very much want to do something that is just what matters and something that reflects our values of wanting to not kind of paralyze you with too much choice, but also introduce you to the fun and awesome stuff that we're working on.
Can you describe a little bit more about your process of making those kinds of decisions? Because I think, you know, historically you have on one side of the gradient, like endless focus groups and, you know, big CPG companies trying every different thing and testing everything and, you know, down to the last detail. And then you have, you know, you mentioned Steve Jobs, like famously kind of on the other end of the spectrum, you know, quoting Ford or whatever, the famous quote of if people asked me what they needed, they would have said a faster horse. And it's just about kind of presenting people with what they never thought they needed. Like, where do you guys, do you employ a little bit of both? Like, how do you actually figure out what people want?
I'd say it's a little bit of both. So there's a lot of different vectors and factors, starting with data science of actually understanding household penetration rates, consumption turns, likes and dislikes, how people think about these assortments, et cetera. So it starts with a lot of data. And then there is the overlay of what we call, you know, belief in Maine. So belief is like I talked about earlier, the belief systems of the just what matters, organics, non-GMO, like the filters of Brandless that make it better. And Maine, meaning that it's across the nation because we sell to 48 states and ship to 48 states every week. And so we are not just built for San Francisco, LA, and New York. We are built for everybody in this whole country. And so it's those two vectors that overlaying the data of saying, okay, well, what's going to appeal? And then we go to our community. And we listen, we co-create, we test, we learn, we do all of that. And then we try things. And so far, so good, but we're only 6 months in. But we definitely like don't want to get to a place where we are, you know, creating too much choice or overproduction or, you know, creating too much, you know, that paradox of choice where you just feel like, I don't even know, it's just where I would turn or why would I need that? We try and make it delightful, surprising, and accessible, because access is everything for us.
You mentioned the word community a lot. What does that actually mean for you guys? How can I engage in this process? How can I tell you what the next thing you should add to Brandless is, aside from having you on the podcast?
Well, I'd say that's a good start. So you sort of, you floated right to the top of the pile because you have my undivided attention, number one. But I would say lots of different ways. So our community emails us, our community tweets at us, our community writes us, our community posts on Facebook, our community posts on Instagram, our community DMs us, our community sends us letters, like any which way, feedback, all of that. We want to hear, we want to know, and we want to hear your suggestions.
Do you ever foresee having a Brandless store, a physical location of any kind? Is that something that you can imagine at all?
Absolutely.
Is that in the works? How do you think that the Brandless store would work differently than any other retailer?
You know, I think that, you know, people talk about the mallpocalypse and the demise of physical retail, and I don't agree. I think what we're seeing is a massive transformation of what role physical retail plays in people's lives. And so I think that retail will really be a place for community. Retail will be a place for trial. Retail will be a place for discovery. Retail will be a place for community to gather, to connect, to communicate, to share, to discover, to, you know, learn, and that will never go away. And I think it plays a really important role. But Brandless, I think, has a great opportunity to do something really special there.
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, because I think we've seen a lot of companies who started online try to experiment with that business model, and it's everyone's trying something different. The showroom aspect is really interesting, but when you think of the types of products that you sell, you know, if I do need that beef jerky right now, is a showroom for beef jerky going to work? I guess maybe.
You know, I don't think a showroom for beef jerky, but I do think that a way to try the beef jerky, a way to experiment with recipes of how you might bring that beef jerky into some other thing, a way to learn about how it's created, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's something that where you can get deeper into the experience would be something that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would like to try that. Do you know if that's on the roadmap? Is that something people can look forward to at a certain point in time?
Yeah, I think they are, and they will. And I think that, you know, we're going to play with, you know, more of a pop-up experience-like retail experience sometime this year. And then when it comes to, you know, rollout of retail, you know, I think we really need to learn and test. But next time you're in San Francisco, please give me a shout, because we have a retail lab right here in our office. So you can begin to experience kind of some of the stuff that we're playing with.
What are your thoughts on a topical note about this new store Amazon launched that's got all the cameras looking at you, and you walk out and everything is self-serve?
You know, I haven't been in one, and I have such respect for Amazon. You know, what for me that's missing is the human layer. And so I think that if you can take away the quotidian and routine jobs that can be replaced in much more efficient ways to save people time, but they're physically there, then what can you replace that with to actually give people what they, not just what they want, but what they need? And what they need is they need to be seen, they need to be welcomed, they need to be validated, and they need to feel present and appreciated. And so I think there's opportunity, if you're able to automate in that way, there's opportunity to have humans play a different role if those things that don't need a human can be scaled in other ways.
Yeah, I would be very curious to see how that works and how that continues to roll out. I agree with you that the human element somehow is important, and the more we can remove the boring tasks, maybe the more we can connect people. We'll see. So if people want to find out more about you and Brandless, what should they do?
They want to find out about Brandless, they should come to brandless.com. They should like us on Facebook and join our community on Instagram and follow us on Twitter so that they can be in the know. They should sign up for the email newsletter because we're always telling stories, sharing new product releases, getting people excited on insider views of what's happening. And soon we'll be launching, you know, content and recipes and all kinds of things. So they should follow us because that's the best place to find out about it. If they really want to know about me, I guess they could do the same on Insta or Twitter, but I think they would be much more entertained on Brandless or Brand. And so on Instagram, we are at Brandless Life. On Twitter, we're at Brandless. And on Facebook, we're at Brandless Life. I'm just at Tina Sharkey. You know, I do some writing at Medium, so you can follow some of my thinking there. But I would say I would spend your time following Brandless because it's way more interesting than me.
Well, I've been thinking this whole time about if I had any good product suggestions for you. And I have to say, I don't really have any great ones. All I would like is for you to like get us completely off of anything else that we're using. So it's like going to be boring stuff like toilet paper. Do you guys have that yet?
We do. It's tree free and it's made from bamboo, grasses and sugar cane.
Toilet paper, that would solve a big problem. And you know what I keep losing is my pens. People steal my pens all the time.
We have amazing pens.
I know you just launched some of those.
All of our stationery and home and office is extraordinary. And we just launched colored pencils, No. 2 pencils, colored pencils, gel pens, notebooks, notepads. They're fantastic. So I think you need to build your Brandless box. And if you want, I can build one with you so we can get online together and I can tell you what to put in your shopping cart. But I would just go aisle by aisle because I think you would appreciate seeing everything.
Well, I will definitely take you up on that. Thank you so much, Tina.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.